Lisa Smith, and I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And, you know, this has been a very sobering time, and I'm sure all of our lives. With this coronavirus, everything has changed in an instant, and it's continuing to change. And all of the affinity groups are meeting to talk about how it's impacting them, how it's impacting their clients, their staff. And Michelle.
Yeah, then Lisa, let's just wait. I guess everyone's still like kind of, let's just give a second for everyone to get in, and then we'll mute them. I feel like people are
okay.
Every minute clicking in, so let's just.
Well, I'm just going to introduce you guys and
okay.
Say that Michelle and Wave and Sarah, your fearless leaders, really pivoted. And Rachel was always going to come in and talk, but when this happened, they spoke to her, and Rachel immediately decided that the three of them decided that they were going to offer you something that you all could benefit from. So I really want to thank both you, Michelle, and Sarah for your leadership.
Do you want to mute everybody? It's so hard to hear you, Lisa. You're saying such nice things.
Okay, so everyone should mute themselves right now, if you can.
Yeah.
If you can't, I'll mute you. It's just hard for you to, I won't know if you want to talk.
Well, they can unmute themselves if you mute them.
But they can't if I've muted them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Haley, try to unmute yourself.
I'm unmuted.
Okay, great. Okay, so I think we should start. I'll just
take you go to 400 in. Webinars on how.
Okay.
Yeah.
May I?
Absolutely.
Welcome everybody to these unprecedented times. I'm Sarah Goodwin. I work at Bush Collaborative Services in Providence, Rhode Island. I want to thank my lovely co-chair, Michelle, and all of you for being here today, and introduce to you Rachel Sorolnik, who comes to us as principal at RAISE Nonprofits Advisors, where she helps nonprofits achieve measurable and strategic growth. She has more than 15 years of experience in nonprofit management. She leads a team of experts in helping organizations increase revenue, strengthen governance, plan strategically, and communicate powerfully. We were lucky enough to have Rachel agree to present for us today initially to talk to us about the RAISE recipe, a recipe and secret sauce for successful fundraising. One of those things she was planning on talking to us about was how to be proactive. Well, we went to Rachel and we said, forget everything, not everything, but in these trying times now where each day is affecting us in more and more, you know, unprecedented ways, is there some way we can adapt the presentation? And she willingly and graciously offered to alter her presentation to be really, you know, geared toward what we're going through and questions regarding how this is affecting us in our fundraising efforts. So many of you may have seen, we reached out to ask if you had questions to bring them to us today. Rachel will address them. She'll give us time to ask questions and we can sort of talk about where we're all at. But I wanna welcome Rachel and have you take the stage.
Thank you, Sarah. And it's been a pleasure working with you and Michelle so far. Thank you, Lisa, for hosting me today. And hi, everybody. It's good to be with you today, even under trying circumstances. When we have difficult circumstances in our lives, it's always good to come together. And even if we can't do it physically, we can do it virtually, which was always our plan here today anyway. So it's really good to be with you today. Just a very quick background myself. I am the founder and principal of RAISE Nonprofit Advisors. I've been in the nonprofit space for 15 plus years, first as a director of development for 10 years in various nonprofit organizations, and then working in the consulting space, helping organizations with everything related to revenue generation and really focusing on data-driven strategy and using project management tools and communication to help our clients with execution and seeing successful results. So as Sarah mentioned, we were supposed to be speaking today about the RAISE recipe, which is really our secret ingredients for successful fundraising. And a lot of that, we kind of divide that into a part art, part science. The science is really the structure of fundraising. And part of that is time management. I was talking to my sister the other night about running this webinar today and saying, you know, perhaps instead of talking about time management now, I should give some tips on how to kill time, right? Like some Fortnite YouTube recommendations. But the truth is, and then the other part is relationships. And these aspects, even though we are applying them differently, are still relevant to us today. Even though that it all seems very theoretical and remote right now that we have this crisis impacting our lives. So we're going to be together today looking at how these ingredients can help us, why they're still relevant in our lives and still guide us, and we really would need to be taking a strategic approach. So Michelle, if you don't mind sharing the slides, we'll get right to it. Thank you. So what we're gonna be doing while Michelle's pulling them up, are you able to share?
Yeah, hold on, sorry. Here we go, sorry, okay. Yeah, you're seeing it now? Okay, hold on. So, slideshow from the beginning. Sorry, okay.
Wonderful, thank you so much, Michelle. Okay, so we can go to the first slide. Thank you. So, you can go to the next slide since I spoke about the RAISE recipe a bit already. Okay, so we're gonna start with talking about pressing questions that have been brought to me by my clients that I think are relevant to you. And this is actually a sneak peek to an article that I am working on for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. It'll be published later this week. And so hopefully these questions will be helpful, and they're probably things that you're thinking about and having discussions about internally. So we'll start with that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the activities how you should be spending your time in the coming weeks. Because a lot of people are asking, what is my role as a fundraiser during such a turbulent time and with so much uncertainty? And then we will spend some time doing Q&A. I know we're up from all social service agencies, so we'll have some time to process. We'll have some time for question and answers, discussions, tips, etc. But the good news, as much as nobody can predict what the future will bring and to what degree the coronavirus will destabilize the normal order of things in our lives, we know that nonprofits, one of the currency which we trade is meaning and hope. And together, we can take the opportunity really to provide that to people and to provide a sense of consistency in our donors' lives. They've been involved and engaged, and our donors generally are people that are out and about at events every night of the week. And this is a time that's very disorienting, and for us to be able to move whatever we can online and to support and to show our the human interaction, even if we can't be there physically, is something of real value that we could bring to our donors. Okay, so the other thing I will say just as a kind of introductory remark is the good news that is if your nonprofit has been keeping up with best practices, meaning stewarding donors to strengthen relationships, communicating openly, transparently, and regularly, and optimizing technology, you have been training for something like the coronavirus this whole time, even unknowingly. So just as we changed the topic of our webinar nimbly and with flexibility, that is really the name of the game in the coming weeks and months. And really something that will help us whether with whatever we're confronting, any threat to our familiar landscape, whether it be an epidemic, an election, or any other geopolitical circumstance. So with that said, let's get to the five pressing questions. Question number one. This is a big one that my clients have been asking. We are all discussing, and it's on our minds. Is it tone deaf to ask for money now or in the coming weeks? And the truth is that our answer on this has been shifting, just like everything else has been shifting so drastically over the past days. We feel right now that the majority of donors that you are targeting are being adversely affected by this crisis. That means that generally speaking, and I will go into the exceptions, we feel that this is a time that's generally better spent on cultivation efforts and waiting for a little bit more clarity and stability before asking someone to commit to a gift. And that is the case for a couple of reasons. First of all, just optics wise, it's just, you know, when the world, like we're right now is the V-shaped economy that we're being taught right now, we're still on that downward shift. We're hoping that the way back up is going to be as quick and painless as possible, but we need to just be sensitive at the context in which we're working. And also, when people are in a scarcity mindset, they're going to be thinking more conservatively. So for us to be asking for money at this time, on a general, you know, broadly speaking, our feeling is that it's better to wait now and to reassess in a couple of weeks. There are a couple of exceptions. So the first is emergency campaigns. If you are doing something and have a campaign that is directly related to the crisis, or your organization is directly addressing the direct needs, urgent needs related to this pandemic, then we think that is relevant and a compelling reason to be asking at this time. But we, again, I feel generally, and also, so those are kind of the organizational exceptions. If there's a crisis or your mission is directly related to helping vulnerable populations in a circumstance, which many of you, that may likely the case. So those are kind of the overall, the big picture exceptions from an organizational standpoint. And then there's also the case by case, just like at any time, solicitations are case specific, your donor relationships are case specific, and you may have donors who are, you know, in online purchasing and suppliers and are doing really well right now, or people that are betting against the market. And as you check in with donors and take their temperature, you may be able to ask sort of on one-off cases where relevant. Other situations may be when you're already mid-solicitation or you have scheduled a meeting. In those instances, we think it's best to ask the donor how they want to proceed. And we think that they will appreciate that sensitivity. And really, again, it's the relationship that's driving all of this. So anything that reflects that you're putting the relationship first, putting in the context of we're in it for the long haul with you, right? If you can't give now, there are volunteer opportunities, there are other things we need your help with. We want your, you know, your time, talent, treasure, all of those things, but we understand we can't all get that at one time, and we appreciate your support in whatever format it may come. So that is number one. Let me stop for a minute. We will have time for questions at the end, but if anybody has anything specific they want to ask about this question or additional comments on this, then now's a good time for us to take those.
So I'm unmuting myself and I'll unmute everyone. Okay, I just unmuted you all. Does anyone have any questions regarding this? Okay. I think they do.
I just have a question, and Lisa, please let me know if you'd rather wait until the end. I think that most of us are serving vulnerable populations, particularly seniors. And so the question is more for the group about agencies going into their own emergency campaigns or federations taking the lead on that. This may not be pertinent, Rachel, to your presentation, and I want to respect that, but I would like to have a discussion about that perhaps towards the end.
Wendy, I think that, Rachel, you could answer if you want, but I think that's definitely an amazing conversation that probably all of us are curious to have. I know I am as well. So, Rachel, did you want to say something about that?
The only thing I would say is in a time of crisis, I think it's really important to have coordination across, you know, always vertically, horizontally, and with your partners, your strategic partners. So I think it's a great question and one that I think donors want to see, that there's coordination and a sense of direction from the, as a Jewish communal response. So I definitely appreciate the question. Not knowing the federations that you're all part of, I don't have a specific answer, but I do think that it's something that should be kept in mind, and a determination should be made on a communal level before before solicitations are made.
Rachel, Beth Joseph wrote in, I don't know if you saw, but I'll read it to everyone. This may be for future conversation, but we typically do a Passover direct mail solicitation. Any suggestions on procedure?
Yes, I just saw that. This is a good question, Beth. I think as much as we are living in crisis mode, we are also doing the things we normally do every day, right? Even if that means shifting a little bit, our kids are sitting in on their virtual classes and we are still getting up and getting dressed, right? We're not in our pajamas yet, or at least not on this video call right now. So I think the normal order of things is to send a Passover solicitation. And that's not, I don't think that's offensive. When I'm talking about solicitations, I'm generally talking about like, hey, can we get together for a cup of coffee? And I'm going to ask you for, you know, a gift that's, you know, at least a couple thousand dollars. So I think that the Passover solicitations are fine.
You know, I wanted to just say, I wrote it, Holly had said, can we keep everyone on mute? You know, if I mute you all, then you can't speak freely. So everyone should mute themselves. And when they want to talk, unmute themselves, and then there won't be that sort of extra noise. It's also difficult because the screen is still on when we're talking. So, Michelle, I might want to suggest next time we stop talking that you unshare the screen so that it can get bigger. Right? But I just wanted to say that to everyone.
Okay. And I want to add one more thing before we go to the next question. If anyone along the way, even while Rachel's addressing her presentation to us and her question, her next questions, if anyone has an additional question, you can add it to the chat, and we'll continue to look and address the questions in between.
Can I just add that we could add to our end of our conversation, besides the federation, like how people are incorporating the current plague into their Passover solicitations, because you know that I'm working on that as well. So I'd love to talk about that.
It's funny that you use the word plague.
Intentionally.
I thought that was great. That's a perfect way to actually talk about it when you're fundraising for Passover.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks, Michelle. Let's go to the next question.
Oh, sorry. Why is it not working? Uh-oh.
Oh, oops. Thank you. Oh, sneak peek question number three. What should I do about my upcoming gala or fundraising event? So it's pretty clear at this point that all in-person events over 10 people are being postponed nationwide. So really what we need to be doing is being very creative about going virtually. And there are pluses to going virtually. First of all, you could share your content with a broader audience. And there are certainly concerns about moving over dinners and conferences that have taken oftentimes months and years to plan. An organization that I've worked with just finished planning an 18-month planning process for a large event that they were doing. They made the whole thing virtual, and really it takes creativity. You kind of have to bend your mind to think about how it was a Jewish camping organization, and they did a virtual s'more making, and they really got creative. So learning the technology, which we'll get to, I think and becoming comfortable with it is very important. A lot of it is user-friendly, but it takes a couple times to get used to. So that is really important. Thinking about, how a lot of times we have events that people with money has been invested in them already. We spoke with one synagogue that had an event. They had a big communal Purim meal, and then they had to cancel it. So they asked their participants, they were candid about what the cost was, and they offered participants three choices. Number one, a full refund. Number two, a 50% refund. Or number three, 100% donation to the synagogue. And more than 80% chose to donate the ticket cost. So thinking really creatively about how you can share content. Now is a time that people are home and have time, have availability. So thinking about what can be shared with donors as cultivation pieces. If you could do a virtual site visit, or if you are offering any kind of classes that they could be, that they could participate in, or even just a town hall and an update virtually. Now is a time that your constituents want to be hearing from you. And again, we can try to bring it about to create some sense of normalcy by showing them your familiar face and the face of your organization. Any questions? Before we move on to the next question. Now you're all empowered to unmute yourselves.
Now I'm prepared to stop sharing the screen.
Hi, it's Rachel Davis in Houston. Just wanted to let you know that we are taking our gala and we are postponing it to the fall. Our leadership is still trying to build a brand around our gala. And we did a virtual concert last week for one of our programs, but we are gonna move our gala to the fall. And on our gala date, which is May 27th, we're going to do a live streaming and pull the raffle for the car. So we'll, you know, have some touches along the way. But I know of many organizations who are moving to October and November that don't want to, who feel that there'll be a financial loss if they do it virtually.
Thank you, Rachel. And also some events, the truth is there are some events that just lend better to, you know, in-person meeting opportunities where people can press the flesh, you know, and just kind of rub elbows with other people. And that's harder to do virtually. So when I'm talking about virtual engagement, for some events, for some organizations that will mean moving their gala or fundraising events online, and for others will mean more engagement opportunities and postponing their events until they can convene in person.
So I'm wondering on this call, how many people had to cancel their galas this year? Mm-hmm. A lot of you. So
Atlantic County, we had a March Madness themed party. So obviously no March Madness, and then the casinos just closed, so our venue was closed. So we canceled and we turned it into, we can't be together, but let's support each other and change the donation levels and sponsorship to be for online.
Okay, and that's going on now?
It's going on now, and it has not received a response, I will say. And I think that's just due to the current climate in New Jersey. Yesterday was really a turning point where everything shut down. So I think that, you know, we may pick it up next week and the week after, which were the weeks of the events, the event would have happened anyway. Because right now everyone is in such a state that it's hard to solicit for anything.
So true. What about in Boston?
Yeah. Sorry. In Boston, our event was supposed to be April 1st. We canceled, last week after the governor announced the state of emergency. Initially, we canceled. We had a lot of pushback from our chairs, and we have now postponed until the fall. So my advice would be to really engage your lay leadership as you're making a decision. I think that, as Rachel was saying, coming together as a community was really kind of overriding some of the financial concerns. And we're hoping that in the next, you know, 5 months, we'll be able to raise the balance. Our fiscal year ends September 30th. So we're trying to reschedule for early September before the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Hi, in Michigan, we had planned to do an event where people were hosting a series of dinners in their homes, and we canceled it. We didn't cancel it, we're postponing it, but we're hoping to host it later in the summer. That's our target. We haven't set a new date yet, but it's currently postponed. I'm wondering if anybody has any particular language or anything they're doing with sponsors. We have sponsors who had already committed, and we were in the middle of some talks with other sponsors. And I'm just wondering if anybody has anything they've done to keep their sponsors, or have thought about any opportunities that this might bring for additional sponsorship dollars. or concerns about losing sponsors with changing the dates of their events.
Wendy, I just want to add, Monica Tan, you wrote that you have an event that's planned as well, Mentors and Mimosas, on May 17th, and you haven't decided whether or not you're going to cancel yet, but in the same vein, you're wondering how, if you've raised a good amount of money, sponsorships and ticket pricing and tickets, how is there any advice on what to do about that, Rachel, and the language that we use to reach out to people?
So I think the synagogue example that I gave could be illustrative here. I think giving people the option, but kind of encouraging them towards the money that you pledge or the money that you gave is still going to the same, to fill the same important need and for the same mission, even with what's going on, even more so because of what's going on now. And we would be so grateful if we can continue to anticipate, to use that funding to support our work. I think that it's also a good idea to think about what other sponsorship recognition you can give those donors, right? If you're going to be hosting virtual events, even if you're going to be sending out community newsletters, like tell them that they're a sponsor of the newsletter, a sponsor of the event, and give them that recognition and explain to them that, you know, where our newsletter is going to be seen by however many people are on your mailing list. When you do posts, when you do virtual, you know, Facebook Live, you could mention them. So there are other ways for them to get the benefit of that sponsorship.
Well, we were thinking of doing the network, of course, you know, has the conference that you all have heard plenty about. We just made the decision that we are not going to hold it in person, but we will be doing it virtually. We don't know what the funding, there's a lot of logistics to work out, but we are going to be doing it. And one of the things that we thought about with sponsorship is that, I don't know how many of you were waiting in the waiting room before we came in, but you know, we would put the sponsors' information there in different waiting rooms so that at least they'd get, you know, some sort of acknowledgement, or maybe even have an opportunity to talk at the same time, or bring people on so people can talk with them at a given time. I don't know if you can do that virtually with your gala, but potentially you can. So trying to think of creative ways to let sponsors know that they're important and that people see who is sponsoring them and can talk with them.
That's a great idea, Lisa. There was a question, and then let's go out to the next question. We could pick up this conversation after the presentation. There was a question about backlog of events happening in the fall. It's possible. Look, this is like a weird social experiment. We'll see, people may just be so happy to get out of their house every night, right? And we'll be happy to attend multiple events. But again, I think coordination among different community partners, there could be some consolidation of events, that kind of thing. And further spread out throughout the month that when this is all, it comes to an end.
Okay. Ready to share a screen again?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle.
Clearly there's a lot to talk about.
How can I cultivate relationships when people won't meet? So, basically, Zoom, Facebook, Zoom, FaceTime, WhatsApp video, all Google Hangouts, all of these are now really your lifeline. And I think for many donors who are older or who are not used to communicating in such a formal way, this is an adjustment. So it's important to set a relaxed tone for those kinds of conversations. Make it really easy. Tell them, I'll call you if you want. So I'll walk you through setting up the link or clicking on the link that I'm going to send you, and set up the conversation with a personal story, something that your kid said that was cute, or a story of impact from a recipient, or asking them questions about their how they've been obviously coping and how they're holding up, to try to set the tone for the conversation. And really providing that personalized attention. So if you're inviting them to an event, to have a dedicated like help desk or a hotline online chat to help people get on, and provide that tech support so that it's a user-friendly experience for them. Also, people now have downtime, people have free time. So there is work that could be done from people's desks at home. If you have people that are editors or artists or social media marketing professionals, and you need to beef up your social, this is a great time. People are on Facebook and on Instagram and all of the social media sites for longer periods now. And this is a great time to be capitalizing on your lay leaders' ability to help you beef up those, your presence on those platforms. This could be a good opportunity to engage younger constituents, right? And there are also ways to engage your older constituents and all different demographics if you have materials for them to be reviewing and getting feedback on. So try to think creatively about how you could be engaging with your donors even during a difficult time like this. Okay. And of course, when somebody helps, just like in like we would in real life, to thank them and properly recognize their volunteer contributions. Okay. Yeah, somebody just wrote a very important point. Just be sure to call your donors to check in about life, how they're doing, how they're holding up. I would say to do this with your, as many donors, you know, to make a list every day, try to get through 5 donors to do, look at, you know, I would start with those that are your major gift donors and work down the line like that. And those that are the most engaged and on a volunteer basis, and to make sure to be checking in with them during this time.
Right.
Okay, great. Michelle, if you want to move.
Yep.
Okay, keeping donors engaged. So as
hold
I mentioned-
a second, Rachel, was someone saying something? Did you have a question before we move forward? Okay, I thought someone was trying to say something. Okay.
No problem. So keeping donors engaged, as I mentioned, this is a time when people are going to be connected to their devices more now than before. And so communication is really important. And thinking about how we can communicate in interesting ways using videos, infographics, and images to tell your story and to demonstrate impact. So it's also really important to think about functionality. So before you go live with something, test it out. Make sure that it looks great and that it's functional on a desktop and mobile, that it's optimized for both desktop and mobile capabilities. And you know, think about offering the opportunity to direct chat with the organization, get text alerts for updates. So to think really about your communications plan over the next couple of weeks. And then last, this could be overwhelming, especially for those of us that have been really face-to-face fundraisers, like the traditional relationship people. This is really a big foray into the world of technology and marketing. So use your marketing team. Think about how you can use your staff resourcefully and also your materials resourcefully. So for your communications content, not every story has to be new. Some of it can be repurposed, and think about using the content you have in multiple ways to share with different audiences. So, and even potentially interspersing posts from other organizations or from other places that that align with your mission. And think about what is the goal in communicating with these people? What do my donors need from me right now? Reassurance, comfort, distraction, a combination of these factors. And think about that as you design the social media and your marketing over the course of the next several weeks. Any questions about this or thoughts to add? Okay, great. So the last question. How do I convey an ability to persevere through trying times? As nonprofits, we are, by definition, fragile entities. We're all working on our sustainability. And so we need to reassure our donors that we have exciting plans for the future, that we're operating from a place of optimism, even though we're going through a challenging time right now, and even though there is currently uncertainty. And thinking about how this crisis is unprecedented, how the organization has overcome other challenges in the past. So if you have a track record of persisting in the face of adversity, then highlight that and share it. And if you have a fiscal contingency plan, or if you can come up with the key elements of a fiscal contingency plan, this is something that donors will likely want to know. So that includes if you're going to be addressing, if you're going to be having budget gaps, right, how you're going to address them. That could mean streamlining services, partnering with other organizations, tapping into an endowment or reserves, or temporarily freezing non-essential programs. It's critical to be transparent, but we also want donors to understand that we're going to do everything we can to keep delivering on our mission. Our clients are waiting, are depending on it, and we're being really strategic in our continued work and with our fiscal planning. So, and if you're able to talk about any way that you're planning on making up for lost revenue, how you're going to do that, a lot of that is unknown, and it's okay. It's okay to say, this is what we're thinking now. Obviously, things are changing on a daily basis, but to assure your donors, the main point is to assure your donors that you're making strategic choices that best enable you to deliver on your core programs and services. Any questions? Okay, so those are my top five questions. What we'll do now for a couple minutes, and then we can get back to conversation, is to look at how, what is a fundraiser's role? Like what, okay, this is all good, but like, what should I be doing from my desk at home, right? And so this is what we were going to be discussing today, sort of the components of what I consider the strong building blocks of a successful fundraising program. And they still are true, although they may look different than on a, you know, a regular, during a regular time. So long-term planning, good habits, relationship-based fundraising, and strong lay participation. So making sure that you think about how are you involving your lay team, right? As we spoke about doing those face-to-face, the virtual face-to-face check-ins, right? And on the planning and what we're going to focus on now for just a couple of minutes is looking at how we can plan while things, while the ground underneath us is shifting constantly. Okay, so Michelle, if you want to just go to the next slide, this is something that I put together. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Stephen Covey's Good to Great. It's one of the big management books that were popular over the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. And he created a matrix that helped people plot the activities that they're doing on a daily basis so that they can focus on the things that will make them most productive. And so if you look at the matrix we have here, we have two priorities. We have two ways of characterizing of prioritizing our work. We have urgency and what's important to get done. So this is what I've done is taken Covey's structure and applied it to fundraising. So you'll see that the top half of the matrix is where we want to be spending our time, right? Important is things that need to get done, urgent rather, is things that need to get done right now, right here, right now. These things, there are deadlines coming up and we need to take care of it. And important things are things we need to do for the well-being and long-term sustainability of our organization. So we certainly want to be in the top half of our matrix. And a lot of times, if I ask people, where do you want to be spending your time? Like primarily, which one quadrant do you want to be spending your time in? Anybody have an idea?
Top left.
Top left. So Covey argues actually that we want to be spending our time and we want to be clearing time on the top right, because the top left we're going to be doing, because human nature is to focus on what's urgent, right? That's why we as fundraisers use deadlines like December 31st and June 30th and crowdfunding campaigns that end in 24 hours, because we know that people will respond to them. He actually said that we want to be spending our time on what's important but not urgent, and clearing time in our schedule to do so, to do that long-term planning, to create projections for our donors, to do running reports and seeing where how we're holding in our campaigns, thinking about cultivating donors, working on evaluation, right? These urgent things are things that we need to get done. This is the second most important category, important and urgent. So this is kind of, it's interesting if you want, when you have a few minutes to think about where your work falls. If you think back to, you know, 2 weeks ago, typical day of work, where your work falls and making sure that it's really falling in this top half of the matrix, and that you are leaving, clearing time for yourself to spend in that top right quadrant. Right now, this all seems to us a little theoretical. We have real urgency in our lives. So what I've done is, Michelle, if you'll go to the next slide, I've transposed the activities that we could be thinking about for our organization, we should be thinking about as fundraisers, onto this same matrix. So everything is, it's kind of hard to distinguish between urgent and not urgent right now, because this is all very short term, but just to help you in terms of thinking about what needs to happen in the next 2 weeks versus the next 2 to 4 weeks to 4 to 6 or 4 to 8 weeks, you know, depending on how things shake out. So let's start with the importance and urgent category. So first, communications. It's very important to be sharing a short-term update. If you haven't sent out an email already about your organization, how you're helping your clients, wishing your donors, the best, and letting them know that you're there to support them, then that's something that you should be taking care of within the next 2 weeks. Emergency campaigns. As you mentioned, a lot of you work with vulnerable populations, seniors, thinking about, do you need to do any special kind of fundraising around that important audience? Developing a menu of online cultivation opportunities. So this doesn't mean that all of these have to be planned out in the next 2 weeks, but you should be thinking about what are the opportunities that we're going to be offering and what do we need to do to make sure that we can offer them in the next couple of weeks. Moving immediate events that are happening online or postponing, as we've already discussed. Support programs and services that with continuity, creating those kinds of smooth transitions as much as possible. Connecting with our donors and lay leaders, and providing meaning and hope. I think this last one is something, these things are kind of start within the next 2 weeks and then continue throughout. Any questions on that quadrant before we move on to the next period of time?
Maybe you want to eliminate this screen, Michelle.
Oh, sorry. Also, I mean, do you have any thoughts of how often we should be sending out communications? I mean, it feels like everything changes minute by minute, so.
I think now is a time when people are more forgiving of regular communications. With that said, you don't want to be emailing every day. Like, people aren't turning to Jewish Family Services in place of their local, you know, the CDC recommendations. But I think it's okay to be in touch, like, on a weekly basis, maybe like a Friday Shabbat Shalom kind of email or start of the week kind of email. I think at this point, people, I know personally, I've been checking, you know, when people send an update or different organizations, I click to see what they're telling me. So I think it's okay to be in contact a little more frequently than regular without, you know, taking advantage and getting unsubscribed. Any other thoughts, questions? Okay, great. So let's go back to the matrix. Thank you, Michelle.
Not so good. Why is it not do that? Sorry. Oh, I know. I know what I'm doing wrong. Okay.
Okay. Next. Just if you can make the slideshow again.
Sorry. Okay.
Just back one slide.
I'll go back one slide.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Good. Thank you. And in the meantime, we have some helpful thoughts in the group chat. Make sure lost revenue is tracked carefully so you can go back to donors about it later when you have skips. Very important. And this is something that actually is on the, if you see here, regular under in the top right quadrant, regular duties and activities. We want to make sure that we are not forgetting to write acknowledgements, to track gifts that didn't come in, to see, any backlog work that can get backlog notes on conversations. This stuff is still all really important to be doing at this time. And regular updates with self-care tips, because you guys are social service agencies, is obviously mission appropriate and welcome, I think, at a time like this. Okay, so then looking at, again, at the top right quadrant here, communication, so messaging for donor conversations. That's along the lines of what I was saying in terms of your fiscal contingency plan. What is your organization planning? What are the key services that you're going to be providing? Longer term strategy, right? How this fits back into your full campaign year. And this may be something, and long-term plans can change. That's okay, you know, but just to be thinking about that. And maybe it's too early right now, but in another couple of weeks to be thinking about that. Connecting with all major donors, which we spoke about, should happen over the next 6 weeks. Social media strategy, which we spoke about as well, making sure that we have a plan to be where our donors are, which is online. And then in a similar vein, shifting our events online, volunteer engagement and recognition. So those are the key areas that we want to be focusing on. And the not important but urgent section, just focusing only on the money, that's one obviously that I think we all recognize is this is not the time for. And fixating, unless it's your job to be the update communications, getting communication updates, or to be doing the tech support, that kind of thing, but it's very easy to be drawn to your phone with every notification that comes along, and to be thinking about, even though we're home now and we are not in our offices and it seems like we have stretches of time ahead of us, how to be using that time most productively. And then in the not urgent, not important category, but things that are human nature, panicking and predicting the future, which is human nature, like I said, but we as professionals and as people will do better for ourselves if we recognize what's within our control and focusing on that. And that I once saw a great Venn diagram that was two circles. One was what's in our control, and the other is what's important. And that area, that sweet spot in between, is where we should focus. So there's a lot that's outside of our control right now, but there is a lot that is important for us to do. And while we all prefer predictability, there are times in our lives, whether it's personal, communal, or global in this case, where the situation's a little bit more chaotic, and we need to be there to help people cope in whatever ways that we are empowered to. And this challenging time is an opportunity for us to do just that. And so we'll go to the next slide. What you see here, the number one tip for standing out in the digital age, when so many organizations are going online, is to do something non-digital. And that's the human touch. That's, as we said, calling donors, sending them an article, a link that you think would be relevant to them, a pick me up, a picture of the recipient, anything that you can do to show them, hey, it's your birthday. I remembered it's your birthday, even with all this craziness. So anything that you can do that shows the human touch that your organization is there for them. And, during good times and times that are more challenging. So that concludes the end of our formal presentation. And let's go back. We had some questions, and we can answer any questions or just take any tips or, you know, activities that people are doing now that they think are helpful. Before you do that, let's just quickly, I'll just share with you, if you want to get MI newsletter and get like articles that my team and I are writing, podcasts, etc., raiseadvisors.com/newsletter.
We'll put that in the follow-up material for
thank
sure.
You. Yes, I'm happy to send the slides also to the whole group if they're helpful.
Rachel, thank you so much. As we wrap up this segment, I want to ask everyone here if you want to add to what I'm about to say, which is I'm already starting to think about all the efforts in getting the community together and making sure that we address the needs of the people that are within our community that are vulnerable. I'm already starting to think past this emergency mode, and how do we acknowledge all the volunteers and all the staff and everyone, even donors who've come to the call for help. And I'd love to hear from some of you if you've already started to think about those next steps and how we're going to set it up via social media, pictures, efforts, that kind of thing. Has anyone thought about it?
That's too far ahead. Okay. Like.
All right, because I'm already starting to think in a couple days when I'm stuck at home, I'll have a little time on my hands and I may want to gather some pictures together and draw notes of all the different people that have, you know, really come out and offered to help and it's another way to cultivate our volunteers and our donors.
I have a question. This is Rachel Kranz in Kansas City. And I'm not trying to put Rachel Davis on the spot, but since in Houston you have dealt with emergency situations like this in the past, and just curious what kind of fundraising you did, or if you have any advice, or maybe someone from New Orleans who after Katrina had to do special fundraising for JFS. Curious if you have anything to share with us.
Sure. I think the first thing, and I have my colleague Lene Novominski with us today too, is that the community, trust the community. We have stay in your lane. So we have tried to really hard not to go beyond our mental health assistance, which is a key thing during this time, as well as our financial aid or whatever else is needed in the community, but not being in competition with the other organizations, just doing our work and letting people know in the community we're doing our work, created during Harvey and the other floods a tremendously good feeling by the donors that JFS was a responsible organization who acted properly. So I think it's just doing your work and letting people knowing you're doing your work was the number one thing, and then cooperating with the other agencies as much as possible. Those are probably the two biggest ones. And be really, really creative. I was thinking about Rachel's idea about reaching out to donors. And there's a really funny and upbeat Uptown Funky Park or walk. I'm so bad at this. With all the great dancers like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And I'm thinking for my donors in their 80s, sending them a link and saying, I know you're at home. Here's something to boost your mood. Those kinds of touches, I think, are going to be really important to be creative and keep in touch with the donors.
Mm-hmm. Likewise,
I want to clarify something that Rachel said when she's talking about partnering.
Lene, you're going in and out. Get closer to your computer.
So, is this any better?
No. Want to write it in the chat?
I was going to say, one organization, a client of mine, is sending out a daily boost. So that's something, at least in the short term, you know, I guess as things stabilize, that may be too much communication. But for now, it's always just something that's upbeat and that's sharing positive karma. And so far, it's been, I think, welcome and appreciated. And this is an organization that their mission is sending people to Israel. So on mission. So it's like, they really can't be doing much in terms of that activity, but they're taking the same philosophy of what they do on their Israel trips, and they're bringing that to their donors in their homes.
So this is Wendy Stripp in Michigan, JFS in Washtenaw County, which is Greater Ann Arbor. So I wanted to jump on the idea of letting people know what you do. Because we are one of the only food pantries that's open in the community, and our service staff, our program people, are really reluctant to kind of put that word out in a big way, because, you know, everybody is, so we're now under this order, as you know, many states are, to sort of limit gatherings we're doing, rather than bringing people into our food pantry, which is what we typically do. We're now doing curbside deliveries. And so it's a big logistical thing. So rather than what we typically do, which is, you know, service basically anybody, we're reluctant to let people know that we're open for business outside of our usual clients. So we're really being careful, at least right now, so that we don't have a crowd issue, we don't have the issue of bringing in new clients. But that presents a real issue for us as fundraisers in terms of some of the messaging we can do. So I'm just wondering if anybody has any similar experience or some wisdom to share.
I think we're kind of in uncharted territory here, but I think that I'm not sure if talking to don't, I think you should get clarity on whether you can talk to donors about that, meaning not for purposes of bringing new, further clients to overload the system right now, but I would get clarity. And if that's something you can share, even if not in like, you know, a big e-blast, but in one-on-one conversations, like just so you know, our community, we are the, you know, like if it's something you could share or something you can share more kind of vaguely right now that we are there for our clients despite all these difficult times we're getting food to them, you know. I think there's probably some level of communication you can have at this point, and then certainly when things calm down, that's something that you should be touting.
That's what I did Wednesday yesterday also. I took a picture of my people putting the food on the curb of my volunteers, and I was like, well, thanks to my donors and volunteers that have our food pantry continuing to go, and sort of was vague about if we're accepting new clients or not, you know, sort of trying to keep that.
So this is Beth in Atlantic County. We have actually started gearing up by loading the pantry. And what we've done is we actually got our local utilities authority to donate recycling trash cans that have a lid and are watertight safe. And we've gotten basically 3 or 4 of our local city halls to allow us to put the bin outside with signage on it so that people can use social distancing but still donate food to us. And then we are using that food in, same as you guys are, the distributing through the car. And we've actually used, we're now using our boardroom as a staging because our food pantry is very tight quarters and we need to make sure that everybody's staying an ample distance apart. So we're using our entire boardroom to stage food that way. So it might be worth reaching out to the local city halls because most of them are closed, but they've been open to putting a bin outside.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that is amazing pivoting. Just another thought, people are looking for things to do with their kids, mitzvah projects. If you guys send out any kind of, you know, coloring sheets or ask kids for projects, that kind of thing, and have like a drop off. I don't know if this is sanitary. You may have to check with the CDC or your local authorities, health department, but even online messages, voice messages without getting into specifics who it's going to, but for seniors, I think families, parents would appreciate that. And that's another way to engage your donors.
I also want to bring up one thing. We got an email, Michelle, you and I got an email from Amy Newman, a development officer who couldn't make the call because of the crisis and what she has to deal with. But she wanted to address a question that actually reminds me of what I was asking a little bit, wanting to know how everyone is handling thanking their donors. She is becoming more and more limited by working remotely from home. So she doesn't have access to the usual means of personalizing thank you letters. They're discussing creating a digital thank you, but she wants to know, given signatures that go on the thank you letters and how people are handling dealing with mail if they're not in their offices, getting mail and not having much of a delay to their donors in terms of the gifts that may have come in. Can anybody address that so I can get back to her?
Or yeah, Rachel? Hi. In Boston, you know, we are doing e-acknowledgments as we have before. Typically, I'll sign letters of $500 and above. We move that up to $1,000 and above. So anything under $1,000 is being sent electronically. So I'm going to be keeping my gift processor home. Our offices are closed. She'll be home this week and next week, and then after that, she'll probably go in twice a week to process those gifts, and I'll probably go in once a week to sign letters. I've spoken to colleagues in different organizations, and I think that most donors are really forgiving right now in terms of, you know, instead of the regular 48-hour turnaround time of acknowledgments. The other thing I'll say also is that we've been sending out personal thank you. So we just got a new $5,000 gift today from a new donor, and our CEO, you know, immediately emailed a thank you. So I think we can do some of that personal, not kind of the tax letter acknowledgments, but still be doing some of that personal stuff. But from a formal perspective, we'll probably go to once a week.
Terrific. Thank you, Wendy.
We have somebody going in and getting the mail and depositing everything into the bank. And then she is, we're all working remotely, and she is sending the information to the person, you know, my staff person who does the acknowledgments, and everything is being done remotely. They've got my electronic signature, so we're dropping in the signature. It's going as an attachment with a note that in the email that says, you know, due to the current health crisis, you know, because we thought it's important to continue to have a system and to respond within 48 hours, as we typically do. So we've gone to an all electronic acknowledgement system for now. And I'll still call people who make, you know, large donations just to give them an extra thank you.
Thanks.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Well, I know we're ending, we have ran out of time, but I kind of wanted to talk. I mean, I see on the chat, they talked about Federation and letting them be in charge of doing the fundraising. Just feels, you know, a little complicated when you're like, I'm doing the work, but sending people to Federation and letting them take care of that, I guess, while we do the work is a great approach that you guys have taken in Houston before, right? And Wendy, you had a question about it before. I was curious to know if you had anything else to say.
We all do the fund. I mean, we do fundraising and CJP does fundraising. And so CJP has announced a crisis campaign. We're trying to figure out what we're doing and how we're adapting our Passover appeal. It was going to be targeted to our food pantry. So we're just determining if we're going to expand that to other needs, and also trying to assess the United Way has a special campaign in Boston. The Boston Foundation has a special campaign. So we want to try to spend this week figuring out what are resources that we could access for specific needs for our clients. How can we access Federation funding? And then, you know, what are our needs going to be above and beyond that?
Right. And I think that's what Rachel Davis was saying about, you know, staying in your lane or trying to understand what everyone else is, you know, fundraising for. That was an interesting comment. Look, I just wanted to mention, I'm not sure you all saw it, but tomorrow is Wednesday. At 4, we're having a conference call about fundraising again with I don't even know who, because I tried to find it and I couldn't find it on my phone at this moment, but you could look it up. You could look it up on our website, or hopefully you got it yesterday. We sent it out again. Just the four different webinars we're having tomorrow at 4. One's on human resources, one's on development, one's on the impact of COVID-19 on residential providers, and one's on home care in home services. So those are the 4 different ones we're having tomorrow.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. It's really reassuring for me to see so many wonderful, intelligent, agile people out there working in the field, caring people. And I hope that Wednesday we'll have the opportunity to reconvene and come back to our originally scheduled program. And until then, I wish you all the best of luck and the best of health, and keep on doing the really important work that you're doing.
Amazing. Very well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Much, everyone. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you all.
Be safe. Be healthy.
Take care.
Bye.